Easy Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Pollock off here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
It's a good sunny Friday morning here in Los Angeles. I'm in a good mood.
You'd be in a better mood if it was Sunday, probably.
Yeah, probably would.
All right, well, we'll get into last night's games here shortly, but wanted to start off with Stephen Curry and his big performance against the Knicks the other night. Scored a career-high 54 points. Also an NBA season high, surpassing Kevin Durant's 52. No one scored more than that in the league this season. Curry was shooting the lights out, man. 11 of 13 from three. Scored the most points in Madison Square Garden since Kobe and LeBron both did it back in 09. Wanted to get your thoughts on Curry's performance. Is that something that's repeatable in your eyes, or did he just get red hot and shoot the lights out for one single game?
Well, the thing is, I think for him it's repeatable. I think, isn't he, I mean, the best pure shooter in the game right now? I mean, I can't think of anybody I'd rather have take a shot, especially from three. And if you look at the shot chart, I mean, he did a really good job of getting open on the right side of the court, which is kind of his preferred side. And once he got a rhythm going, it stopped, you know, this happens to a lot of guys. We've seen it happen to LeBron and Kobe and Durant and all these guys. Once he got a rhythm going, it really didn't matter anymore what the Knicks did defensively. Like, he could have stepped 5 feet behind the three-point line, and it was moot. It was going in. He just had that groove going. You can't let him get in a flow like that because he's just, like I said, I just think he's the best pure shooter in the game today.
Yeah, I don't disagree there, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, you cannot let scores like that get going. You know, once they start seeing the ball go in through the net, you know, it's pretty much over, you know, for certain guys in this league. And that's, you know, one of the reasons Kevin Garnett over the years was always a big proponent of those dead ball block shots, right? He didn't want those guys to start seeing the ball going through the net, you know, even if the basket didn't end up counting. You know, as for the Warriors, you know, what are our thoughts on the Warriors in terms of their postseason, you know, prospects? They're currently a sixth seed, 2.5 back of Denver, and 2 up on Utah and 2.5 up on Houston. So they're kind of in the middle of the bottom half of the Western Conference right now. What are your thoughts on them to finish out the season? Do you expect them to rise, maybe fall before the playoffs, or maybe just kind of end up where they're at right now at 6?
Yeah, I kind of think they're locked into the 6. I don't think we're going to see a lot of movement. First off, it's just good to see them in the playoffs after how badly run that franchise was
for
a couple decades under Cohen. You know, one playoff berth in 20 years. It is awesome to see them in the playoffs, getting some energy, maybe getting a new building. Just there seems to be a revival around the franchise period, and that's exciting to see because that's such a great fan base and a great city. So, A, that's fun. B, I want them in the 6th seed, and I want the Clippers in the 3 seed.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be one fun first-round series. They're not going to beat the Clippers. They're not deep enough. They're not, you know, Chris Paul is just better than Stephen Curry, and they're not going to be able to contain Blake Griffin for the whole series with David Lee. That said, that would be a lot of fun. That would be up and down. That would be an entertaining series. So I'm rooting for that.
Well, yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the Clippers. Right now, that is who they play if the playoffs started today, which they don't. It's important to note that. But, you know, the Clippers, the top of the Western Conference, once again, we're only talking about like 3 games separating the Spurs, the Thunder, and the Clippers. So, you know, any one of those 3 teams could end up winning the conference. All it's going to take is a run to get hot, you know, near the end of the season. I don't expect the Spurs or the Thunder to fall off, of course. But, you know, you just don't know how that seeding could shake out. Either way, it's going to be tough, right? I mean, if the Warriors don't get out of that 6th seed, you know, you're looking at the Clippers, Spurs, or Thunder, and they're not, unfortunately, I don't think they're beating any of those teams, but, you know, the way that they shoot the basketball, they could get hot, they could provide some problems, and, you know, who knows if they end up getting Andrew Bogut back, if that's going to help, although, you know, when he was back, that's unfortunately when the Warriors started to struggle a little bit.
Bogut's the big question for them to me, and it's not just this playoffs, it's really long-term. I mean, they are not going to be contenders. They are not going to take the step from where they are up to, you know, discussing Clippers and Spurs and Thunder without a real presence in the paint to defend them. And Andrew Bogut was that guy at one point. I mean, he would, if you could get Milwaukee Andrew Bogut back, who was such a good defender in the paint and such a good passer, he'd be perfect for this team. But, you know, I'm at the point where I'm really questioning what we're ever going to get out of him again. Health-wise, he's just with the ankle surgeries, with the back issues. I mean, his elbow seems back now, but he's never quite been the same since this string of injuries, and you have to wonder if he's ever going to quite be the same and if they can rely on him. And then I think the other long-term question for them, and it's a serious question, it's actually discussed a lot in the Bay Area, can you, how far can you go with Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson as your backcourt? Two shooters, two kind of similar players. Do you need somebody who can penetrate? Do you need a better defender paired back there with Steph Curry than Klay Thompson? Is that a combo that can take you that far? I mean, I have my doubts, honestly, that they can, how far they can really go with that backcourt combo.
Yeah, I think long term, you're absolutely right. You know, they've gotten a monster season out of Jarrett Jack off the bench, though. And you know, if that could continue, you know, that's not a long term solution. Obviously, you know, he's a veteran. He's been around a long time, but you know, maybe in the next couple of years, he might be able to help. But I think you're right long term. But it'll be interesting to see. Okay, going over to the Thursday night games. You know, the best game of the night, unfortunately, was not nationally televised. The TNT really needs to work on that flex scheduling thing that that the NFL has going on, because you know, we had the Clippers and the Pacers as really the best game of the night in Indiana. You know, those teams are both top tier teams in each of their respective conferences. They only play, you know, twice a year, so it would have been nice for a wider selection of fans to get to see them. But Pacers were without Roy Hibbert, you know, serving that suspension for his role in the dust up with the Warriors the other night. You know, a lot of debate: is it a fight? Is it a brawl? I don't know what it was, but it was worthy of suspensions for sure. Hibbert's absence allowed LA to pretty much do what they wanted inside. They started off really ice cold from 3-point distance. I think if Hibbert was there, the Pacers might have gotten off to an early lead, but instead, you know, LA just did its damage inside. Danny Granger and Jamal Crawford both had it going early. It was a pretty good game up until the third quarter, when the Clippers pulled away. They got up to a big lead, 17 points actually in the fourth, before the Pacers put together a big run. They cut it all the way down to 4, and then it was Chris Paul time. I mean, Chris Paul basically just decided, okay, this game's over. Scored 3 straight buckets for his team from the field, and then hit the final 2 game-clinching free throws to score, you know, the last 8 points for the Clippers. Chris Paul isn't going to win MVP this season because LeBron James is being ridiculous, and, you know, there's always Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City. How good, though, has Chris Paul been this season? How important has he been to the success of the Clippers?
It's unbelievable. I mean, he has to be in the conversation. I mean, you're right. He's almost on a third tier with Tony Parker, and it's really almost not fair to either of them just because the other two guys are so good. But they have both been so instrumental in what their team does. And in Chris Paul's case, I think what gets overlooked, I mean, he is an amazing floor general. He can score like we saw at the end of the Indiana game. His defense is key. I mean, he is a really good defensive point guard. He's one of the league leaders in steals per game, and that ignites that fast break. And, you know, as we've been saying with the Clippers, what you can't let them get easy buckets in transition, or you can't catch up to them. Like, they're a pretty good team, and then you give them 10 easy buckets on, you know, alley-oops in transition, and you just can't make up those points. Chris Paul ignites a lot of that, and it's not just the passing, but he's been unbelievable. He's just one of my favorite players to watch just because of how he controls the game. You know, all the way back, like I said, I mean, if anybody who doubts that he can do this and hasn't seen enough of him needs to go back and watch the second half of that gold medal game against Spain when he was, with all due respect to LeBron, he was the guy controlling the game. He was the best player on the floor.
No, that's absolutely right. You bring up a good point about his defense, too. I think that gets overlooked at times. And, you know, what's interesting to me is the contrast of the player off the court that Chris Paul is. He's basically one of the nicest guys in the league to talk to. You know, the league's full of nice guys. Like, all these guys pretty much are great to talk to off the court. There's a very small handful of players that aren't. But Chris Paul is exceptionally nice, goes out of his way to be engaging, you know, talk to you, do whatever. And then on the court, he's just vicious. He's just a nasty player. Like, he scowls, he's competitive as they come. You know, not a lot of teams have a guy like that. It's a very short list of guys that are as competitive as Chris Paul and have the talent to back it up. You know, we talked about the Warriors and how far they could go in the playoffs. What about the Clippers? What's their ceiling this season? How far can they get with Chris Paul and the depth that they have?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'm not sure that they beat Oklahoma City. And the Spurs are the interesting you know, to me, that's the interesting conversation if that's the matchup. You know, if it becomes – I mean, I think the Thunder play too much to the Clippers' style of they can run with them a little bit. They can get some easy buckets. And I'm just not sure the Clippers' defense is steady enough to hold Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in check You know, Serge Ibaka can pull guys away, both defend and pull some guys away from the basket, so the Clippers don't have that defense in the paint. The Spurs are more interesting because then it's a – like, if it's just pure talent and youth and athleticism, the Clippers are a better team. But the Spurs are so precise. And if it comes down to – I mean, you're talking about a Vinny Del Negro versus
right.
Greg Popovich coaching matchup. I'm probably going to take Popovich in that lineup.
Yeah, I just might. You know, we talk – you know, this keeps coming up, right? We always talk Spurs-Clippers for some reason because that's – you know, those are – that's a playoff matchup that's likely down the road. And then we always get back to the coaching. And it's like, well – at that point, you know, we may have some problems for the Clippers. You know, I think it's an interesting situation for that team because, you know, they're expected to go, you know, at minimum into the second round of the playoffs, okay? So if they don't get there, you know, it's a huge disaster for this team this season. And then you got to wonder, is Chris Paul coming back? Does Vinny Del Negro get blown out? Probably the answers to those two questions are yes and yes. You know, unless the Clippers can somehow make it to the Western Conference Finals, you know, at least. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see that, you know, the Western Conference playoffs are going to be amazing. You know, the Spurs, the Thunder, the Clippers, all three of those teams are going to be in the mix. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, when you're talking about Vinny Del Negro's future, it is directly tied to Chris Paul, I think. And not only, if, like you said, if they make it to the conference finals or somehow even the NBA finals, which I think is a long shot, I don't think they're that good.
Right.
But if they could make it to the conference finals, it's pretty hard to run him out after, you know, the Clippers' best season. But if they're out again in the second round of the playoffs because they lose to the Spurs or Thunder, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if both Chris Paul and Blake Griffin kind of hinted to management that it was time to make a move. Ultimately, though, those are the guys who will make that decision in a lot of ways, I think. As much as anyone, I think that right now Chris Paul has a lot of sway in that front office.
Yeah, and as he should, right? I mean, he's the type of player that the franchise, you know, needs to hang on to.
Exactly.
They need to make sure he comes back, so that's probably the way to go there. All right, well, quickly to the games that actually did make it onto national television. Weren't so much fun to watch. First one, we had the Bulls and the Sixers, you know, two teams at the bottom of the league in offensive efficiency, so we pretty much got what was expected. Both teams shot 38% from the field, right around there. Joakim Noah saved us, though. He put in kind of a monster historic performance, 23 points, 21 rebounds, and 11 blocked shots. A couple of great stats regarding that. He's the only player with 20 points and 20 rebounds to shoot at least 65% from the field ever, according to Elias Sports. So that's pretty awesome. And then he's only the sixth player ever to do the triple-double with the blocks with greater than 20, 20, and 10. So pretty amazing night for Joakim Noah. You know, the Sixers are the Sixers. They're just, you know, not that good. Doug Collins had the meltdown the other day, which was really weird, actually. I wanted to get your thoughts on Collins real quick because it wasn't a traditional meltdown where he's like, his voice is raised and he's freaking out. He was very matter of fact, like smiling the whole time, very positive, but he clearly ripped his team, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I would use the word resigned after
mm-hmm.
that. Like, he just seemed like, this is what it's going to be. My team isn't that good anymore, and I've accepted that. A, it's great. He came out with quotes, you know, last night before the game, and we have them up on the site today, that he's like, yeah, everybody told me that this went viral and that I was trending. What does that mean? Like, he had no idea. But the best part was that he was like, I don't think I was that harsh. I was just kind of laying it out that we didn't put out the effort and we don't stand any chance of winning games without effort and energy. Because then he goes on to admit, like, look, we built a team around Andrew Bynum. There's no Andrew Bynum, and we're going to be very limited because of that. And he's right. I mean, they can only do so much. They're only going to be so good this season without Andrew Bynum. And they're certainly, you know, they lost seven in a row now. They're out of the playoff picture. They're six games back. They're not catching anybody to go to the playoffs. So, you know, it's kind of a wasted season there. And they just need to get Bynum back so they can have some sense of who they are and what they need to do in the offseason. They have right now, it's how do you even evaluate this team?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Collins ends up coming back because he kind of has a history of only coaching a few seasons at a time. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he even wants to come back to deal with this. It's always surprising to me when guys leave the broadcast booth to go back to coaching because the broadcast booth is such a cushy job. These guys don't need the money. The travel's a lot less. So it's always surprising when that happens. But, you know, he did a good job with that team, pretty much as good as could be expected. But it'll definitely be interesting to see. You know, on the Bulls side, you know, that's a team that's built around defense. There's no question about it. They're going to be a tough out in the playoffs, even if Derrick Rose doesn't make it back, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. And I still expect Rose to be back and playing at, sure, you know, 75 or 80% of what, you know, we expect. He's just, you can't come back from an ACL and be that explosive unless you're Adrian Peterson. And I think that's, you know, that's the outlier.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to be a tough out, but I don't see them, you know, maybe getting out of the first round. We'll see what the matchups are, but more than likely they get bounced then. They're just not going to score enough. And teams will find a way to put up a few points on them and be able to shut down the offense and control it. You know, with Rose, maybe they get to the second round, but I can't see it going much beyond that, honestly. And part of that is, you know, they've slipped down. They're going to have to face a better team in the first round because they don't have a lot of the depth they had last year. A lot of the guys that they were bringing off the bench and getting quality production out of have been replaced by Nate Robinson and Marco Bellinelli. And you know, look at Omar Asik and how well he's playing in Houston and realize that, you know, that's now Nazir Muhammad. Like, you just, it's all a big step back for them.
Yeah.
And that hurts them less in the playoffs and more in the seedings. But, you know, the seeding's going to matter because they're going to get a pretty good team in the first round now.
Yeah, you mentioned the seedings. I took a quick look. Bulls are currently the sixth seed, but they're only three games back of the Knicks, who are in second. And in between, you got Indiana, Atlanta, and Brooklyn. So there's some shuffling to be done, especially if Rose comes back before the end of the regular season. They can win some more games than possibly expected. But I think you're right. I think the seeding's going to have a lot to do with it. You know, interestingly enough, if they play the Knicks, New York's going to be in some trouble. The Bulls have beaten the Knicks three times this season. But, you know.
Look, if you can slow down the Knicks' offense, you know, they haven't defended well enough to stop. You know, their defense has been, after their first stretch, I mean, if you get out of the first month or so of the season, their defense has been average or a little below average the whole rest of the time statistically. And if they don't get that back up, they're not going to last long in the playoffs.
Yeah, New York's a team that likes to play at a slightly higher tempo. They like to score points. They're having fun when they're shooting threes and Carmelo's out there, you know, dropping 35 points. That's a good game for them. But you get into those grinded out games with the Bulls, and you know the Knicks offense definitely struggles, so it'll be interesting to see. Last game of Thursday night, we had the Lakers cruising to a win over Minnesota. Not really much to talk about, except for the fact that, you know, the Lakers haven't cruised to wins over anybody, really, you know, this season in a long time. Team might be finally starting to come together. You don't want to read too much into a game against Minnesota, but what I have liked lately is the play of Kobe Bryant. You know, he was clearly energized last night. He threw down a couple dunks, missed another one. You know, he's hitting shots from 5 feet beyond the three-point line. Whether or not that's just confidence in knowing that Minnesota's terrible or, you know, he's just turned it up a notch later this season, we'll have to see. But, you know, definitely interesting to see the Lakers cruise and not struggle, you know, by losing a lead, you know, as we've seen many times this season.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know that the Lakers are dramatically better now than they were earlier in the season when they were losing more games. In this sense, their numbers statistically, like their point differential and stuff, was always pretty, you know, better than they showed.
Right.
And they're improved now slightly, but I think the difference is that slight improvement, and they're starting to find that identity. Like Dwight Howard last night was moving much better than he has in a while on the defensive end. You know, he didn't have a monster line, but he, you know, shot 5 of 6, had 11 points, had 13 boards, but he was moving well and defending well in the paint. And as long as they're getting that, you know, some of those games they dropped early that they probably shouldn't have, they're now winning. They're getting some wins, and they're starting to make a push towards the playoffs because A, they're getting a little help, and B, they're finally just good at, you know, I think their identity gives them a chance to, they've won what now, 12 of 16 or something. You know, they've figured out who they are.
Yeah, I think
starting to.
Yeah, I mean, the key right there, you mentioned it, it's Dwight. I mean, on the defensive end of the floor, they got him because, you know, yeah, he can score sometimes, but really they got him because he's just a force inside, you know, when he's relatively healthy, when he can move well, when he can get off the floor to contest shots, when he can jump to rebound, he's looking better and better as the season goes on. And, you know, honestly, the Lakers are finally relatively healthy. You know, they're still without Gasol, obviously, and they lost a bunch of guys earlier in the season, but they were without Nash for a stretch, they were without Dwight for a stretch. Now they're finally healthy. Like, they're getting to play together a lot of games, and I think that, you know, that's helping the improvement as well. You know, always got to sort of take the temperature on the playoff chances. What are your thoughts as, you know, we start to wind down this regular season? Do you think they get in, or is it still going to be a struggle?
I think it's still a struggle, but, you know, I had them as almost no chance a few weeks ago before they started this win streak. Yeah. So I didn't see this kind of streak coming from them. Now that they've figured it out and put it together, you know, I think that there's a chance. If you look at the line, and this has been discussed before, but if you look at the schedule going forward, I don't think they catch Houston. I think Houston's going to get to like 46 wins.
Yeah.
They have a really soft schedule, and the only, you know, yeah, they lost the other day because Monta Ellis hit a prayer.
That's a great shot.
Prayer at the buzzer. But, you know, the Bucks aren't a terrible team either. They've got some very, very winnable games. They're going to get hot. And like I said, I think they get to about 46 wins. And if they get there, I don't know that the Lakers can get that, you know, that far up. But the Jazz have a really tough schedule. They still have Jefferson and Millsap. They didn't make any moves at the deadline. Right. So I think, you know, they're not going away. But if you can get to 44, 45 wins, you may catch them because they have a rough rest of the season ahead of them, or much rougher than the Lakers do. So it's suddenly possible to me. I still think they're going to need some help, but it's not – I've gone from thinking it's just not going to happen to thinking that they have a 30, 40% chance of making that happen.
Yeah, you know, I would agree, and I'll even go higher than that. I say that they absolutely get in. You know, I just think as long as they stay healthy the way that they've been playing, they'll get in. I'm not going to try to predict who's out. You know, like you mentioned, it's, you know, Houston has an easier schedule than Utah, but I just expect the Lakers to win at a clip that will allow them to get to the postseason. But that being said, I think they need to string together the wins as they've been doing sooner rather than later. You look at the way their schedule ends the season, it's especially tough. Okay, so just real quick, they host Memphis, then they're quote-unquote at the Clippers, obviously, at the Staples Center, so whatever. But Memphis and the Clippers then host the Hornets, who, that's a winnable game, but the Hornets always play sort of scrappy. Then they have to play at Portland, never an easy game at Portland. And then the last three games, they're home against the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Rockets. So that's a pretty brutal schedule for them to end the season. So I think they're going to need to be sort of locked into a playoff position before then. If they put themselves in a situation where they have to win, like, five of those seven games, we're in trouble.
Yeah, agreed. I think you're right. They've got to do this now. And I think if they can carry that momentum over, they can win a number of those games. But it does get harder. You're right.
All right, we are really lucky here at the PBT podcast today. We have got Ira Winderman to talk some Miami Heat. Ira's been covering the Heat for a long time for the Sun Sentinel. He writes for NBC Sports, and he's kind of one of those guys you've got to follow on Twitter. He's at Ira Heat Beat. Thanks for doing this.
Glad to be here, Kurt, and glad I got a team worth talking about.
Yeah, after a few years of struggling down there, it's certainly a team worth talking about. And it's interesting, you know, I think we nitpick the Heat right now. We're like, Chris Bosh is really, they've won 12 games in a row. We're like, Chris Bosh is really struggling. Oh, you know, can Ray Allen perform in the, you know, when it matters? What about the role players? Is that the case? Are we kind of overstating their problems, looking for flaws in this team right now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the way they have pulled ahead of the Eastern Conference pack right now, distancing themselves from everyone but Indiana. Down here, it's a case of, like you said, Chris Bosh, why not more rebounds? Is Udonis Haslam worth playing as a starter? Why is Mario Chalmers inconsistent? And then you wake up and you look at the standings and you're going, yeah, they're going back to the finals. So, you know, it's a case where on a day-by-day basis you could notice the flaws, but you step back and you look at where they're in the standings right now, they're having a pretty darn good season.
Yeah, they definitely are. With Chris Bosh, is this just one of those things where he's in a little – I mean, he seems to be getting some pretty good looks in the offense. He's just not in a groove right now.
Yeah, you know, the biggest question with Chris is the rebounds, but I think people want Chris to be who he is not, and he is not a power post player. He's to a degree, a lot like Pau Gasol people compare him to. He's a finesse big man who is an acquired taste, and you could talk about the rebounding, but keep this in mind. LeBron James, all the metrics will show, is the best rebounding small forward in the NBA. Dwayne Wade, arguably, is the best rebounding shooting guard in the NBA. And Chris jokes about it, but I think it frustrates him also. He's got guys on his own team stealing his rebounds. So they don't want him in the post. They want to be able to keep the lane open for LeBron, keep the lane open for Dwayne. So he's playing a very bastardized type of power forward role. So I don't think his numbers will ever look like they did in Toronto. But you know what? Every now and then they'll have a game and you'll look and you'll say, yeah, I remember that, Chris Bosh.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned briefly the Pacers. To me, is the more I see things shake out in the East and I see them get Granger back and Hibbert starts to play a little bit better when he's not getting thrown out of games, is that the team that's probably the matchup problem the worst out of the East for the Heat? I mean, is that the team that could give them trouble?
Yeah, you know, they had these consecutive Sunday games against the Knicks and then against the Pacers, and everyone's sort of talking about them as being the ultimate showdown, but the Knicks are a little bit too flighty. They're all or nothing on three-pointers, and while they have a couple of 20-point wins over the Heat already this season, no team has been able to make or break on three-pointers enduring in a best-of-seven playoff series. But the Pacers have the brawn. You need two big physical players on the court to really have a chance against the Heat. And in Hibbert, when he's playing well, and in David West, who's had a very good season, the Pacers can offer that. And Frank Vogel really has his team fired up. He reminds me of Pat Riley when he first came to the Heat. Those guys will go through a brick wall for Frank Vogel. So that's going to be every bit an uglier series as it was last year when they met in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Yeah, I had an interesting thing down at Houston at the All-Star game where a basketball person told me they thought the team best suited out of the West to knock off the Heat was San Antonio.
Absolutely.
Because of their ball movement, because they can handle the ball pressure on the perimeter and make some plays. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we're talking two teams in the West, at least right now, with all due respect to the Clippers. And,
yeah.
And with what they did to the Thunder last year in the finals, and then the way they swept the season series from Oklahoma City, including that dramatic and relatively easy victory before the All-Star break, I think people are sort of writing off the Thunder as a legitimate heir to the Heat's throne. But you know, the Spurs are cyclical, and Tim Duncan, you know, he does this. Every 3 or 4 years, he's the great Tim Duncan again, and he's going through one of those cycles. And Pop has done a great job of resting his regulars, and they have enough bigs with Splitter playing very well this season, and enough big bodies they could throw with the Heat that yeah, if you're saying right now in the overall NBA, what's the toughest challenge? Yeah, I would agree it would be San Antonio.
I feel just obligated to talk about this at this point, even though I'm kind of weary of the LeBron pregame dunk issue. he's not ever doing the dunk contest, and some people seem, I mean, especially I think after a dunk contest that was just not that impressive this year, there's a lot of people pushing him to do it. But is he really talking about, does it bother him enough that he would consider shutting down his pregame stuff just to because of the people talking?
Sort of blew up a little too much. He's been doing this for years now. Every game, he'll give the home crowd, and usually the road crowd, a couple of really spectacular moments, because you know what? He just enjoys playing basketball. But the Heat, I think, sort of put it over the top when they actually are broadcasting the Heat's layup line on a dedicated camera on LeBron on Heat.com on their own channel, and I think LeBron is like, whoa, step back a little. I don't mind doing it for the 15,000 fans who might get there early to watch, but I didn't mean this to be a spectacle unto itself where pretty soon Nike or someone's going to be out there marketing it. So I think LeBron might pull back a little, so you never know when you're going to see the dunk show, but there still will be dunk shows.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's part of it. He actually seems on the court and with stuff like this, I mean, he always wanted to have fun. This was one of the almost knocks on him back in Cleveland before he could win. But he still seems to be now like enjoying himself and more comfortable, at least after winning last year, if not all of last year leading up to that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you could see everyone. You put the ring on their finger, they're a different person. We spoke about Chris Bosh, how he's more at ease. Eric Spoelstra, none of the questions are there anymore about whether he's a championship coach. And it was the ultimate, you know, sort of way of LeBron of just taking all the pressure off of him. It's almost like that ring had superhuman powers, you know, where you put the ring on him and all of a sudden he's at peace again. And you could see that before the game, during the game, after the game. Championship LeBron is a lot different player.
The other issue that's come up a lot in the last few weeks, and it's, again, insanely speculative, is would LeBron leave in 2014? I mean, I think we can agree he's going to opt out in 2014 and go after the money. But to me, as much as it pains Cleveland people to hear me say this, I think he's going to be loyal and stay. I mean, do you see a real chance of him leaving now? I mean, maybe down the line, but I don't see it now.
I think more than anything, it's a matter of what do they do in the finals the next 2 years. You know, that's what it comes down to. If this team is going to win two more championships, no one is walking away in the middle of a three-peat. But if this team shows flaws like they did in 2011 against the Mavericks, where maybe he says, wow, Dwayne's getting old. Wow, we can't afford to keep Chris under the new luxury tax rules that become, you know, so cost prohibitive. I think he weighs everything out. I think the most important moment, the most important time for the Heat will be the final 2 weeks of 2013-2014, because his opt-out will then come to either extend his contract to get more favorable terms for himself, maybe more favorable terms for the Heat. But if he's not coming off a championship and he's coming off a rough go in the playoffs, just as was the case when he left Cleveland, then all bets are off.
Yeah, and there's certainly – it's amazing how teams like – I mean, not only Cleveland, but Dallas will be there. The Lakers could be very well be there. I mean, they've only got to have a couple guys on the – people are lined up just in case.
He had people come into Cleveland to see him. It was the Nets, it was the Knicks, it was the Clippers, it was the Heat, it was the Bulls. You know, the Cavs went and made their turn. I don't think he will ever do it again as that public a spectacle, because we all know the worst moment of his career was, quote-unquote, the decision. It won't happen that way. It'll be done through his agent. It'll be done privately. He'll get almost sealed bids in envelopes, and then he'll do whatever he wants. And a team would be irresponsible if they have any chance to get him not to at least leave themselves open for that.
Agreed. This is a once-in-a-generation player, and if you can get him near his peak,
right.
I mean, not only the possibility of the rings, but I think what he brings, people don't realize what he's brought to the Heat in terms of franchise value, in terms
of
marketing and sponsorship.
You're talking $34 million. Immediately the Heat went up, the Cavs went down, Dan Gilbert noticed it, so you have to at least give yourself that chance.
Exactly. Ira, thanks a lot for the time.
Always been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Kurt.
Take care.
All right, and then just a little more Heat talk to round things out here. Simple question for you, Kurt, yes or no. When LeBron and Wade are rolling like they're rolling, can anyone beat this team in a seven-game series?
No. I mean, honestly, I don't think so. I had an interesting thing that somebody told me down in Houston at the All-Star game, that they thought the Spurs were the better matchup, because what San Antonio can do is handle the pressure. A, they've got Tony Parker. B, their whole offense is based on system and ball movement against pressure and taking advantage of what you do. And what they like to execute on offense counters what the Heat do on defense way better than what the Thunder want to do. The Thunder, you know, they're counting on Durant and Westbrook and Moore, and not quite isolation sets, but they're not doing the kind of ball movement and the kind of player movement off the ball that you see with the Spurs. And so that makes some sense to me, that maybe the Spurs could put up a better fight in the finals, but I'm not sure the Spurs can get past the Thunder. That's just always been a tough matchup for them. And I'm not sure it matters. Even if you put the Spurs in there playing well, can they even get it to six games? I mean, look, Heat beat them in the Thunder in five last year. I think the Thunder are better, but I'm not convinced they're that much better.
Well, and the issue is that how much better is LeBron? You know, we didn't think it was possible, but I mean, he's just putting together an amazing season. So I just don't see it. I think if LeBron and Wade are both playing at a high level, you know, like we've seen in many of the games this season, and the team chooses to defend. I mean, essentially, since right before the All-Star break, they said, okay, it's time now. You know, we're going to play defense every night, and, you know, on the offensive end, we're going to be just fine with our two big guys. So, yeah, I think it's going to be tough for anybody to beat the Heat in the playoffs or the finals.
Yeah, and we said this when we were, covering the finals last year. There's a really good chance that in the next 4 or 5 years that the Oklahoma City-Miami finals will repeat itself two or three more times. I mean, I think you've got a budding rivalry there of teams still improving in the Thunder's case, and in Miami's case maybe at or close to their peak, but they're going to be there for a few more years. And so we may see this matchup multiple more times in the finals, and the Thunder are going to have to figure out how to get over that hump, because you and I watched that Valentine's Day game. Miami is in the Thunder's heads right now.
Yeah, that game wasn't close, and I think the Heat know both. I think both teams know where they're at right now, so it'll definitely be interesting to see. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments, let us know how we're doing, and Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
Talk to you then.